This podcast is brought to you by Ideate and Execute. Do you want to drive innovation in your organization, futurize your enterprise, ideate massively valuable new products, or execute them to market? Then contact us today at ideateandexecute.com and get started.
Why listen to the past when you can listen to the future? Welcome to the Think Future podcast, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. We focus on innovation, startups, and the future, not necessarily those and not necessarily in that order. Here's your host.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. It's great to finally meet you. This is how we meet each other nowadays over Zoom.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization and what you're passionate about?
Sure. I'm Cedric Bryan. I'm the President and Chief Science Officer for the American Council on Exercise. I have a PhD in physiology from Penn State, and I've been in and around the health and fitness space for, heck, probably the last 35 years or so.
Fantastic.
And the American Council on Exercise is a nonprofit organization that's based in San Diego, and we have a simple mission to get people moving. And I think because of our name being the American Council on Exercise, I think people have a misperception of really what that mission entails, and they think that it focuses exclusively on exercise or physical activity. While that is certainly a primary focus of ours, it's really think of it in terms of getting people moving toward adopting and maintaining healthier lifestyles, with exercise or physical activity being a critical component, but all the other healthy behaviors from, you know, proper nutrition and eating, stress management, proper sleep, all of the important lifestyle behaviors that can help individuals be their best selves, as well as really help us as a society. Because if you think about just the vast number of individuals that are impacted by a variety of chronic illnesses, that we know if they could lead healthier lifestyles, that we could really have a pretty profound positive impact on reducing those numbers. And from a public health perspective, we believe that our mission is a very vital one.
Yeah, well, definitely, but incredibly challenging, right? Because
yes.
It seems to be, how difficult is it to get people to eat better and be healthier? I mean, it's like, how do you scale that mountain? It sounds
it's
impossible.
A monumental challenge, and it's not a challenge that a single organization can accomplish. And that's why collaboration is so important. And I think the encouraging thing is that there are a number of organizations that are coming together to try to work toward achieving that end. And you asked, what am I passionate about? I'm really passionate about kind of coaching and coming alongside individuals to help them be their best selves by helping them with the journey that behavior change can be. And that, mm-hmm. We all think we give people these simple little solutions. For example, folks who want to better manage their weight, there's the tried and true, people will say, what did I say? Exercise more and eat less. And
yep.
If it were that simple, none of us would be challenged with it. And so mm-hmm. it's really helping to kind of create an environment for individuals to have a chance of being successful in that endeavor of being able to make those healthy choices on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, I mean, you're right. It is kind of simple. It's just getting people to accept the simplicity of it and actually go through with it. Right. I mean,
I would argue in theory it's simple, because, like, for example, weight management or weight loss or weight control is a pretty complex issue, in that there are environmental factors, there are physiological factors, there are personal factors, and we have to take into account all of those. And that's really why I think behavior change science might be the secret sauce, because I think if you think about it, if you were to ask most people, should they be more physically active? Should they, eat healthily? Should they, try to manage the stress? If I asked 10 people, virtually all 10 of those people would probably say yes. You might have that contrarian who might say no. But for the most part, most people would say yes. But if I posed a somewhat similar question to that same 10 individuals and say, how many of you are exercising or being physically active on a regular basis, making good nutrition choices on a regular basis, having good, you know, sleep hygiene on a regular basis, I'd be lucky to get two hands that could be raised to say yes to that. And so what's responsible from that, for that disconnect where there's the people who believe it's important, probably have good intentions of doing it, but aren't doing it on a regular basis. And I think it really is the challenges of changing behavior. Mm-hmm. And we all think that if we just give people enough evidence that they'll naturally make the choice. The evidence is pretty overwhelming that all those things are good for us. And that still doesn't seem to be enough to have moved the needle. What really I think is the challenge is, how do you get people to deal with the natural ambivalence that we have toward change? And that's mm-hmm. where behavior change science comes into play.
Right. Absolutely. And it also has something to do with sort of reward, right? I mean, if you're looking at, I'm eating this cupcake now, it's delicious today. If I'm working out, I know I'm not going to be able to lose weight for a long time and I can't get to that goal. So it's really difficult for people to understand this sort of like the long-term thinking that you need to have in order to improve your wellness.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
And so it seems like it's the other question I have here is that it sounds like you're saying that there are, one of the things I've noticed over time is that everyone has really individual solutions to getting to that point. So everyone's body is different. Everyone's physiology is different. There are some sort of standards you can look at and say, well, most people will lose weight if this happens, but there's still others that do not fit there. So how do you balance that between the, here's advice that works for everybody and here's advice that only works for you? I mean, are we leaning more towards the individualized plans or is there more of a solution that works for everybody?
That's occurring is moving more towards kind of an individualized approach to offering these solutions, because as you so aptly stated, we are individuals and so we have different physiologies, different body chemistries, and we're going to not all respond exactly the same. Because even if you look at the research that's available, for example, just looking at physical activity and its impact on weight loss that a person can anticipate to experience, provided that diet is controlled for, if you look at on average, individuals can expect to lose some weight. But if you look at the individuals that make up that average, there are a variety of responses that occur. Some lose large amounts of weight. Some lose very small amounts. Some even actually see no change or might even slightly gain weight. Mm-hmm. And so it's really trying to understand what works best for the individual. And that's why it really has to be a kind of a dynamic process where we're trying to learn as much as we can about the individual to provide the best advice that works for them. And part of it is asking the right questions and then listening to understand so that you can identify what barriers or challenges that this person has experienced over their lifetime that we might be able to help them better navigate and come together and collaborate with the individual in terms of appropriate goal setting. I think that we oftentimes are trying to climb the wrong mountain in that people have these goals of, I want to get to this certain weight or this, certain level of body fat, whatever the number might be, as opposed to looking at it as, I'm going to adopt a lifestyle of committing to regular healthy behaviors and commit to that over a time period. And what results from that is really what's kind of the ideal outcome for me. In that it's not just trying to get to a certain dress size or waist size or pant size, but it's really coming up with a strategy that can allow you to achieve a body weight that you can maintain over a lifetime. And so you're not going to be able to do that if you try some fad diet that restricts certain foods or certain amounts of calories, but rather finding an eating plan that you can say, you know what, I can do this for a lifetime. Because the fact of the matter is that most people will have short-term success. They might lose some weight quickly, but unfortunately they gain it back. So people end up losing and gaining that same 15 to 20 pounds and become extraordinarily
frustrated. That's me.
No, and the thing is, it's pretty frustrating. And then you start to convince yourself, well, you know what? I'm never going to be able to be successful at this. And yep. I think part of it is that we really don't set appropriate goals for ourselves.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it sounds like it's the difference between something you can quantify and something you can't really quantify. It's like, how could I quantify that I'm eating healthy and I'm feeling better as compared to, oh, the scale says this? I mean, has there been any work on being able to quantify the other stuff, or is it just more of a gut feel?
Well, there are some in terms of, you know, that we do know that certain eating patterns have better health outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so following those eating patterns and shift the focus so that it's less on weight and appearance and more on making healthier choices, I think is kind of the first step. And that's one of the things that, quite honestly, has been a bit of a kind of hidden blessing from the pandemic, if there is a positive from the pandemic, is that there's been a shift in the motivations for individuals as it relates to exercise. With exercise pre-pandemic, it was overwhelmingly kind of tilted toward losing weight, looking better, and, you know, kind of all those more aesthetic related outcomes. And there's been a pretty significant shift toward better managing stress, better mental health, feeling better, better sleep, all of those things that really before were kind of afterthoughts are now really kind of a key driver as to why individuals are seeking out being more active. And I think those types of things are easier for people to experience success with.
Interesting.
And hopefully that will translate into better adoption and adherence.
Right. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about sort of, is there settled science in this space now? Because you've got, on the one hand, the calorie thing. On the other hand, you have the keto, paleo, those kind of diets. Is there anything that we can say, yes, this is definitely going to work? Like you said, exercise and moving more and eating less, right? But is that sort of settled? And we know that's for sure, because there's so many people who can lose weight on keto, which is, you know, high calories, high fats, et cetera.
Ahead. I mean, I think you raised an excellent point, and I think that's one of the things that I'd say the science experts and researchers in this area kind of wrestle with, is that, you know, I can show data where keto results in terrific outcomes for individuals, intermittent fasting, you name the eating approach. And so I think that's where kind of the prevailing thought now is that you can do a variety of things from a nutrition approach and experience success. And really the key is finding that approach that's going to work for that individual for the long haul. And for some, because there's some pretty interesting evidence to show that intermittent fasting can work quite well for quite a number of folks, and that it's an eating style that they can adhere to. And other people, they fail miserably taking that approach. And so that's why I would encourage people to not get down on themselves and get discouraged if they've tried, you know, XYZ approach. Just continue to kind of hang in there, but really focus on, typically the approaches that tend to work best are those that aren't overly restrictive, because it's impossible for most normal humans to adhere to a extraordinarily restrictive approach for a long period of time.
Right.
I mean, there's that rare, super, super uber disciplined person who can just, you know, do it, but they're quite rare.
Well, if you think about it, if you're super uber disciplined, you should probably be able to use anything, any tactic.
Exactly.
And it just do it. I think it's most of us we're the lazy ones who are like, you know what? I want to have that cupcake today instead of working on my discipline.
And I wouldn't say lazy, just the very human ones.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Well, and personally, I've gone through, I mean, I did paleo for a while and I lost a lot of weight. I did keto for a while, lost a lot of weight, gained it back. And then I tried caloric restriction. That started working. So it's almost like everything you try, your body eventually gets used to. So you have to try something different, and you have to try something different. But unless your metabolism is already designed in such a way to keep you thin. I mean, is that an accurate statement?
That's partially true, but the thing is really kind of finding that, because what happens with all of those approaches is that you become less strict in your adherence to the protocol, because the protocols aren't designed for the long haul.
Right.
Is the reality. The other thing too that I think is important for people to realize, and I think is that's why it's important for us to give people evidence-based information and solutions, is that one of the most beneficial roles that exercise can play when it comes to the whole weight management realm of things is that if you've experienced the weight loss, if you can engage in exercise on a regular, consistent basis, you're more likely to maintain whatever that outcome was by being physically active. There's the National Weight Control Registry, which is a registry that tracks individuals who have lost significant amounts of weight and seeing how long they keep it off and, you know, what their likelihood of regain. And what they found is that those individuals who were most successful at sustaining pretty large amounts of weight loss, the one thing that they most had in common was that 93% of those individuals who were successful exercised on a regular basis.
Right.
And so while exercise isn't going to necessarily help you to burn huge amounts of calories to offset, you know, poor eating behaviors, if you do adhere to pretty good eating behaviors and you are exercising, whatever gains or improvements you make in terms of your weight and body composition, you're more likely to sustain if you exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, and I know people who are like, oh, I'm just going to work this off. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
Because it's, if you really do want to lose weight, it's the food. It's that, that is the piece of it. That's the 60, 70, 80% of weight loss is what you eat as opposed to how you exercise. And so the combination itself sounds like it's a real sort of.
Yeah. I mean, if people just
for long term,
you know, kind of think about it, just kind of, realistically, that, you know, it would take me about 2 to 3 minutes to eat a burger,
say,
but it would take me about 90 minutes of moderately intense exercise to come close to being able to offset that.
Exactly.
There's just not enough hours in the day for us to be able to, you know, offset a high caloric you know, imprudent diet.
Yeah. I think people don't understand sort of like the difference, because you've got your, you know, Carl's Jr. burger, which is 1400 calories, and you're like 1400 calories is like what, almost a pound or almost what, 3 hours of intense exercise.
About 3 hours of activity. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, there's such a differential there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like, what do you think of sort of extreme caloric restriction? So like 800 calories a day or something like that.
Well, those approaches are largely ill-advised unless you plan on just staying in bed, really. Now, if you plan on being a living human.
Well, I kind of like the sound of that. Just stay in bed and eat 800 calories a day. Yeah. It works for me.
I think that's a life that we'd all sign up for. You know, it's really because you need a certain amount of calories just to sustain normal life functioning. And those super, super low calorie diets really aren't good for our entire kind of, you know, physiological systems over time. Mm-hmm. And so that's why people can't adhere to them for a long time, because the body will be a good sport for a time period. And then all of a sudden the body says, no, time out. This isn't going to work.
Yep. So you eventually start craving the $1,400 calorie burgers. Well, so what about supplementation? I mean, you've got diet and exercise. Is supplementation sort of essential, or if you're eating the right thing, then you don't really need any of it?
It supplementation is not essential. I mean, there are certain supplements depending upon individuals, again, you know, in terms of age or issues, like, for example, with regard to, say, things like calcium and vitamin D for women and optimizing bone health and so forth. There are definite, you know, justifications. But in general, if we're eating a relatively healthy, balanced diet and, say, taking just a basic, you know, one a day type supplement, most individuals should be covered fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they're just, you don't really need, there's no magic supplement out there that will actually help.
That's the thing, is that because unlike height, we can try different things that may not be the most advised or science based for us,
and well said.
Get results with weight.
Mm-hmm.
But the true thing is that there are certain just genetic limits that we have in terms of how low of a body weight is going to be healthy for me, healthy for you. But in terms of, you know, I'm 5'7". No matter what I do, I'm going to be 5'7". So we tend to accept our limitations in terms of height.
Yeah.
But we tend not to in terms of weight, because we can do some arguably foolish, ill-advised things to create a temporary effect on our weight.
Right, right.
Whereas
exactly.
If you're 5'10", you're 5'10", and you say, okay, I'm 5'10". But if you're 5'10" and you're 180 and you say, well, geez, I want to be 160, you can do some things to get to 160, but they're not necessarily physiologically wise.
Right. So it's probably not a long term.
Exactly.
What people do something to, in the short term. So what would you say is the best way to, so let's say I have a target in mind and I really want to get there. Is there, and you were talking about behavioral change. Do you need counseling, or are there online?
You do, there are health and wellness coaches that you can certainly work with that can counsel you and come alongside you in that journey. But I think it's also important for people to have realistic expectations in terms of what truly is a healthy or ideal weight for them. And what I tell people to do is to think about a few things. Think about the lowest weight you've been able to maintain for at least 6 months to a year during your adult life.
Mm-hmm.
Think in terms of what your current functional capabilities are. Think in terms of what your kind of health risk profiles are at the current time. And it's really kind of the combination of those things would help you to kind of zero in on what's truly a kind of ideal, healthy body weight for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've never in your, you know, adult life been able to sustain 160 pounds, but you've been able to sustain, say, 168 or 170 pounds, that's probably closer to a true goal for you than trying to, achieve that 160.
Right, right. Yeah, because I mean, when last time I talked to the doctor, he said to me, he gave me a number and I said, wow, that's like 10 pounds or 5 to 10 pounds more than I thought it would be. Because if you look at all the charts, uh-huh. I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be this. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's impossible. I've never been that.
It's exactly.
Because I mean, your physiology is different. Is it true that I can have like heavy bones or something like that?
Well, there are some differences in bone density, but that tends not to explain the variability for most of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. So despite your efforts, it seems that obesity is still increasing.
Yes.
Like what do we need to do? It seems to me that a lot of times human beings can only change when something major happens. Like they have some horrible health thing happens in their lives or to one of their loved ones. And then they sort of change their behavior. I mean, do you have any ideas of like how we could sort of somehow do something that would help people to change behaviors quicker or understand that it's more important than they've been putting effort into?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, if you think about it, since about 1980, we've been going the wrong way and going the wrong way pretty precipitously during different periods. And And if you think about it, it isn't because all of a sudden we saw some change in our gene patterns, or that we all of a sudden had just become so less disciplined and this is worldwide, this is global, not just the US.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, part of it is that, you know, there have been some things that have changed in our environment where we've certainly made it easier for us to be less active and to really adopt and lead a more sedentary lifestyle. So, you know, part of it is certainly, I think, making some environmental changes that might encourage us to be more active just as the course of our normal day. Also being able to make it more challenging to have unhealthy, high calorie, but low value foods are so readily available to us in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, I think a lot of it is helping to create a better environment for people to be successful in leading these healthier lifestyles, but then also giving them the social support as well as the professional support to kind of go on this journey. And I think part of it too is to help people to recognize that it is going to in fact be a journey, and it's not going to necessarily be a straight, smooth journey. There are going to be some some bumps in the road, and you know, we just have to navigate our way around those and recognize that to some degree we're going to have a few steps forward, and we might have a back step, but that's not failure or fatal. It's just a momentary blip, and we just continue to progress toward whatever is a realistic kind of ideal for us. And I think one of the things that's going to probably help in that regard is utilizing technology smartly to be able to engage and connect with folks, as well as this, I think, this shift even from a medicine standpoint, there's a shift toward a more personalized or individualized approach to care. And I think the same thing has to be true with regard to the challenge of weight loss.
Right. So what do you think of these new weight loss drugs that are out there that are hot in the news, like Ozempic and Wegovy and things like that? But I mean, are those just temporary solutions as well? I mean,
they are. And really, the unfortunate thing about Ozempic, while Ozempic is certainly effective in promoting a weight loss, I think it's pretty disturbing personally and tragic that you have individuals who are utilizing that drug when its real design is to help individuals with type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
And you have situations now where individuals who need it for a very concerning medical condition can't gain access because people are using it for these kind of weight loss aesthetic purposes. So I find that a little misguided.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. But it's a prescription drug, right? So is it the doctors are prescribing it off use or whatever I forget the term.
Yeah,
is,
exactly. But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. Well, I mean, those are, like you said, those aren't long term effects. I mean, you might lose weight.
No, and the thing is that none of those things are going to be sustainable unless you change your lifestyle as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in your particular work, I mean, how do you help? I mean, do you help fitness professionals, or where do you guys fit into the overall scheme of making people more healthy?
We educate and train our professionals to kind of play that role that I'm talking about in terms of kind of that trusted advisor who can come alongside individuals on this kind of behavior change journey. So we educate and train and certify health coaches, personal trainers, group fitness instructors, and medical exercise specialists to fulfill that role. But we also provide a great deal of education to the public so that they can be informed in terms of, you know, this whole notion that we're talking about in terms of having a more realistic perspective on what is healthy and what is reasonable and what are proper goals. And so we try to come at it from both sides in terms of the professional side as well as the end consumer side.
Mm-hmm. Great. But you focus mostly on the exercise, or is it the holistic wellness now?
We will talk most about exercise, but we also will address, you know, other healthy behaviors from, you know, stress management to kind of proper nutrition and basics of nutrition. But we also do a lot where we collaborate with other like-minded organizations so that we're really kind of taking this team approach. Because in my opinion, good healthcare is the ultimate team sport, where mm-hmm. you have a lot of different players from different disciplines who are working together for the same outcome. And so we work with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. We will work with individuals physical therapy. We'll work with the AMA. We work with the American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association. So we work with these like-minded organizations to try to bring this concerted collective effort to trying to shift the curve, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So I got a question for you on these sort of food pyramids and things like that are, are those wrong? I mean, it seems to me that I'm looking at these food pyramids and I'm going, this is a lot of food that you're asking me to eat.
I would say that they're not wrong, but it gets back to your earlier conversation that they're based upon the average typical person.
Mm.
And who is that?
There's no such thing.
Right.
If you ask me, as an average typical person, like, who are they targeting these things towards? They must be targeting to teenagers who have high metabolisms or something.
Well,
I don't know.
What you're trying to do is you're trying to give a recommendation that can accommodate a wide kind of demographic, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of average advice. And so average advice isn't precise, specific advice. So it's not going to be optimal for everyone.
Right, right. And you touched on something I thought was interesting earlier. You mentioned the environment. And I think mm-hmm. that's a lot more important than people think. People think, I'm just going to have willpower. I'm just going to power my way through this. But the reality is it's the environment around you that helps you do that. Like if you have a social circle that goes out and eats burgers every Friday or something like that, you're going to have a tough time.
Losing weight. And there's quite a bit of research in social psychology and behavior change psychology that shows that, you know, who we hang around with has profound influence on the behaviors that we're likely to adopt.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it like you're the sum total of the five people you hang out with? You know, have we tried taking their weights and averaging them and going, oh man. So when it comes to exercise, is there like a one exercise that sort of is head and shoulders above the rest, or is it all the same? Just like get moving, like get on a bike,
really
walk,
or
whatever.
It really is get moving and find that activity that you particularly enjoy, because you're going to be more likely to adhere to it. If we're thinking about from a purely physiological standpoint, I think it is important for people to recognize that it's important to be doing aerobic or cardio type activity, but also resistance training or muscle fitness building type activity. And I think for many years, the resistance training component of fitness has been miscast as being for those individuals who are concerned about purely aesthetics, and that it serves no real kind of health purpose, but that nothing could be further from the truth. And this might be a little dangerous for me because I'm not the most mechanically inclined individual, but I'll try to give an analogy with an automobile. Mm-hmm. If we think of the aerobic system, cardiovascular system, as being analogous to the fuel system in our car, and we think of the muscles as being analogous to the engine, the engine powers that automobile so it can move and drive and function. But it needs to get the fuel, the gas, from the fuel system. Same thing with our muscles. Our muscles are the engines that power our body, that contract our muscles, that allow us to move. But it still needs that good fuel system in the form of the cardiovascular system to get that fuel, oxygen, energy to allow us to move and function. And so you need both to really be a well-functioning machine in terms of a human, just like an automobile. And when you think about all of the health benefits associated with just the resistance training component in terms of, you know, better function, better bone and joint integrity for people who are thinking in terms of cardiometabolic health, it helps to improve insulin sensitivity, which helps helping us with, you know, better blood sugar control. It's been shown to help to reduce the blood pressure response when we are doing any type of lifting type activity. So carrying our groceries and doing those types of things become much safer and less challenging activities for us if we focus on muscular strength. And so I would say from that perspective, I would encourage people to pay a little bit more attention to the resistance training component. And that's why if you look at the recommended guidelines for activity, it recommends that individuals accumulate 150 minutes of cardio type activity over the course of a week, combined with two resistance training sessions that are done over the course of a week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always thought that the biggest difference is that, especially when it comes to weight loss, is that with cardio, you're burning calories only when you're doing cardio. Whereas with weight training, with weight resistance, you're affecting your muscles in such a way that there's continuing sort of calorie burn afterwards because your body's repairing itself. Is that an incorrect statement?
That's not quite. That's one of the challenges with the wide availability to information, access to information, is that there's
doctors really hate the internet.
some slight misinformation out there and things that get overstated. In that, yes, our muscles will help. Doing muscle conditioning or resistance training can help us to, you know, improve our body composition so that we have more lean tissue relative to fat tissue. And lean tissue is a bit more metabolically active than fat tissue, but it doesn't translate into us becoming these calorie burning furnaces during the biggest benefit of exercise from kind of a weight control or appearance standpoint is that given equal amounts, let's say if I had a pound of fat in my right hand and a pound of muscle in my left hand, the pound of fat is going to take up a whole lot more space than that same amount of muscle. And so that's where the benefit comes in, is that that's going to allow you to fit better in your jeans and your dress and so forth, because it's more dense. And so it's going to take up more, less space. But in terms of having this powerful, you know, kind of calorie burning, you know, after effect and so forth, that's been overplayed. The same thing is true when people talk about the afterburn as it's related to high intensity interval training. Again, you do burn more energy with higher intensity exercise, but it tends not to be quite at the level that people are led to believe.
So speaking of HIIT, is that something that is, would you say that that's sort of like a level above everything else, on like, if you were able to do that and sustain that and the sort of like the resting and high intensity, is that sort of like the best, the best calorie burning exercise?
It depends upon the individual. If I was working with an individual who, you know, had some base level of conditioning and accustomed to exercise and they were pressed for time, then I'd probably look at having them perhaps do HIIT a couple times a week.
Okay.
Because it's very time efficient. But for a person who's unaccustomed to exercise, that may not be the most pleasant experience for them initially. So I would probably start with something that's a much gentler, lower intensity form of exercise.
See, sometimes I think that the reason why a lot of people don't exercise is just boredom, right? Because we have our phones and we sit there and we're scrolling and we're always constantly getting these dopamine hits. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not the same when you're working out.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So there's got to be some way to keep us occupied.
Keep engaged.
So what do you think of these new kinds of sort of prepared foods like Soylent and things like that, where you could just sort of, have a bottle of a meal and that's it? Do you think that's good for us, or it's useful? Or, I mean, are we going in the right direction when it comes to stuff like that?
I'm And I think the research bears this out. I'm a bigger fan of taking advantage of whole natural foods as opposed to replacement meals and the like.
Is there a particular reason for that, or?
Well, because one of the things is that, again, I'm not so sure how many people are going to enjoy that for the long haul. And I also think in terms of its accessibility for the largest segment of our population. And I also think we have to give some thought to what's unfortunate is that oftentimes the people who need to make some of these healthy changes are the ones who are in the most under-resourced locations. And so being able to find things that are quite accessible and affordable for most people, I think should be a high priority.
Yeah, sometimes I think to myself, I don't know if you saw the Repo Man, but there was this movie Repo Man where all of the products in the movie were, it just said like a can of food. It just said food. And it said like drink or something on it. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if we could just invent some kind of like a food, literally a canned food or some kind of a packaged food, which had all of your nutritional, everything you needed. Sort of like, kind of like what Soylent or these are things. And it could taste good or whatever, but at least it gave you sort of like that base level of nutrition. Do you think we'd ever get to something like that, or food is just
Well,
too
if you
part
think
of the.
about it, in extreme circumstances, that's kind of what the like some of the meal replacement things were designed for military use when you're in an environment like that. So in extreme circumstances, those things to a degree do exist.
Yeah, but you don't see it sort of becoming sort of a common thing where people are, because we've put too much sort of sense into food. Food is such a huge thing
Oh, it
for
is.
people. So that's probably why reason why it's so difficult to change it too, because it's like, okay, well, your wife's not on the same diet as you, and you're like, ah, it's.
No, and that's why really kind of getting that social support and so forth is so important, because you're right, because if you're trying to make these healthy changes and everyone in your orbit are doing all these other things that go counter to that, then you're asking that person to really have an unbelievable level of self-control, and we know, and self-control and willpower, and we know just how that is in limited supply for most of us.
Exactly. So it's time to think like a futurist. It's the year 2032. It's 10 years from now. How do you think things have changed? Do you think we've actually sort of dug into that obesity number a little bit? Or, I mean, are we going to see new things on the market? I just read the other day that apparently the FDA has approved lab grown meat. How's that going to affect us, right? So what do you think? What do you see coming at us that might be helpful in?
Okay, I do think I'm encouraged in thinking that we are going to see some improvements in the number of folks who are at least participating in some level of physical activity. And the reason why I say that is that influential organizations like the WHO and the CDC have some major initiatives in play to kind of take a systems approach to helping to change that. And so they're from changing policy to doing things that are going to make the environment, make some changes in the environment so that it's easier for people to make the active choice, if you will. So I am encouraged that by that time period, which is roughly a decade from now, that we will see some level of improvement. Probably not a level that any of us would do a backflip over, but I think we'll see some movement in the right direction. I think we'll also see some movement in the direction of making some of these services and resources more available to a wider audience, because I think that is also part of the charge here, because one of the things the pandemic made painfully apparent is that in these under-resourced areas and communities, they were the individuals who were at greater risk for being infected by the virus and also having much poorer outcomes should they become infected.
Right.
And a lot of this was due to the fact that because of the lifestyles that they lived and in some cases were forced to live because of lack of access, set them up for this by right. having a variety of these chronic conditions, many of which are greatly influenced by lifestyle. So I do think that we're going to start to see some improvement in terms of kind of this availability, access, and health equity, which I'm excited to see.
Excellent.
I do think that the pandemic has probably forced the fitness space to embrace technology more than they have prior to pandemics. I think there was a thought that technology was the enemy or a threat to yeah. what they were doing. And now I think they see it as a tool that they can smartly leverage. And so mm-hmm. I think we'll see some changes in that regard as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Very cool. And do you see, I forgot what I was going to say. But do you see like more technology being able to be to help in this case more? I mean, do you think we'd be able to see? I think one of the things that you alluded to earlier on is like sometime in the 80s that we just saw things mm-hmm. change. And is it because sort of food changed? It became like worse for us. There was more GMO. There was more. They pumped up the calories of certain things, like the size of plates got larger or whatever. It seems like there was a change in our eating habits where we ate more. Do you see that maybe we're going to see a different change where our eating habits are going to change again, or are we still going to be on that?
I'm hopeful, but I would say less than cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm. I figure if we can use technology, wouldn't it be great if the mm-hmm. technology knew we were trying to lose weight or get healthier and actually forced us, like our automatic car, instead of driving us right up to the door, it would drive us like a mile away and we'd have to walk mm-hmm. the rest of the way. So do you see some
No, that would be all part of that environmental change. And one of the things yeah. that there are some technologies out there now that are helping individuals to be able to, I think, increase our level of awareness of just how much we are consuming. Because mm-hmm. I think oftentimes many people think, well, my diet really isn't, I'm not really overeating that much. And because we just don't give thought to the things that go past our lips. And yeah. so there are tools where you can simply take a photograph of your meal, and there are different apps and so forth that can tell you what the fat content, the calorie content, and so forth wow. that meal is. So can, because one of the first things in being able to address a problem is to kind of recognize the magnitude of the problem. And so that can help in that awareness thing. And then there's another app, what's it called? It's ATE. Mm-hmm. And what they do is that a lot of the apps focused on diet and nutrition tend to work on, counting calories and telling people what they should or shouldn't be doing. And what ATE tries to do is they try to get at kind of the why you're making the choices you're making and try to help coach people to recognize those things and to develop strategies for making better choices, whether it's, you're making these choices because you're bored, because you're slightly depressed or you're stressed, and really try to help people understand kind of what's lying beneath kind of those choices, those poor choices that we make.
Boy, that's super important. I love the sound of that. Mm-hmm. So I remembered what I was going to ask you about mm-hmm. devices, things like Lumen, where you can blow into it and it says, it tells you, hey, you should probably eat this today because, uh-huh. I mean, what do you see with those devices? Do you think those
I tell you, given the amount of attention that those types of devices are receiving, I would suspect that you're going to see kind of continued efforts along those lines. And I think because of the activity, there are going to be some that are going to have some level of impact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's been great.
It was very informative. Fun, Chris. Yeah. No.
So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Sure, they can reach, well, one, people can access a lot of free information on all things kind of health, fitness, and wellness related at the American Council on Exercise's website at acefitness.org. And you can reach me at that same location.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. I'll put links in the show notes so everyone can get directly to you. So Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Talk to Chris. You soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.